Good evening and welcome to Chicago Tonight Latino Voices. I'm Joanna Hernandez on the show tonight. Protests erupt in Venezuela following the country's presidential election, what it could mean for the U.S. and Chicago. How community organizers are working to document Latino history.
We just want to showcase our heritage.
And a nurse and a factory worker team up to open their own very own pizza place. We stop by for a slice. And now to some of today's top stories. Police say a convicted felon is being charged with the fatal shooting of Cook County Sheriff Deputy Raphael Wardlaw. Officials say 32-year-old Cordero Thompson allegedly tried to rob the off-duty deputy at a gas station in Woodlawn before an exchange of gunfire. Wardlaw was shot in the chest and later pronounced dead. Police say Thompson was taken into custody within 3 hours of the shooting. Authorities say Wardlaw would have celebrated his 32nd birthday next week.
Countless friends, family, and co-workers gathered to release balloons in the deputy's honor just as his work shift would have ended. There, they described him as a hard worker and that his personal mission was to make people feel safe.
Bears fans, the wait is finally over. Football is officially back. The Bears are kicking off the preseason tonight against the Houston Texans in the annual Hall of Fame game in Canton, Ohio. But fans who were hoping to get their first glimpse of rookie quarterback Caleb Williams will have to wait a little longer. The team's coach says the first overall draft pick, along with other starters, will be sitting out tonight, given the team has three other preseason games on the schedule. Tonight's matchup begins at 7. And Lollapalooza is transforming Grant Park once again into a music oasis. The four-day festival includes a variety of artists and genres from hip-hop to punk rock. The city is expecting thousands of music goers to attend this year's festival to watch headliners like Megan Thee Stallion, SZA, The Killers, and Blink 182. And of course, be on the lookout for street closures or just avoid downtown altogether this weekend. Up next, the fallout from a disputed election. That's right after this.
Chicago Tonight, Latino Voices, is made possible in part by the support of these donors.
Protests erupted in Venezuela over the results of the country's latest presidential election. Current President Nicolas Maduro declared victory, but his opposition is raising concerns over the accuracy of those results. The country has seen millions of residents flee to neighboring countries, including the United States, after years of economic instability and political unrest. Joining us to break down what is happening is Martin Albert, who works on humanitarian aid for the organization PANAS in Chicago, and Juan Gonzalez, a senior fellow at the Great Cities Institute at the University of Illinois, Chicago, and Ana Jill Garcia, the co-founder of the Illinois-Venezuelan Alliance. Thank you all for joining us. Ana, I want to start with you. What was your reaction when you heard Maduro say that he won?
After being, you know, Sunday, with such a hope, and I think there was this unified sentiment that this was the election that we were going to win. Definitely, you know, just waiting until midnight and then listening to the National Electoral Council indicating that Maduro has won, I said, definitely not. So I was, there was, you know, disbelief that happened. And I think that opinion is not only my opinion, you know, the majority. Of course, some sense of sadness. We were hoping to be celebrating the following day.
And in talking about, there was, like you mentioned, hope and anticipation
right,
on election day that Edmundo Gonzalez, opposition party candidate, was going to win.
Exactly, exactly. And he won.
In your eyes, you say he won.
Right. In my eyes, you know, in all the data that is coming out and you know, the international community, the participation in the international community just, you know, demanding the voting tallies, you know, just to be released by the government. I think that we still have a lot of work to do. You know, there is a clear path right now that we didn't have before.
But as you mentioned, it was a really emotional one for you.
It was a very emotional. I think it was emotional for many people.
And Martin, I want to bring you in. You moved here to the U.S. from Venezuela in 2017, and you were actually part of the resistance forces and Maduro's against Maduro's government before that. Tell me what it's like to be a protester and part of those rallies that we see in the videos.
Yeah, we share the same feeling that against the government. We were suffering all kind of stuff when we were living over there. And basically, we were facing the death every day. We were in the protests. We don't know we are be able to go back home with our loved ones, because it's like a rolling a dice. It's sometimes you get caught with the police or the Guardia Nacional, or sometimes you get a bullet.
You mentioned that you were in charge of protecting the rallies.
Yes. So. I used to wear a lot of protection, and I wear a tear gas mask and welding gloves to protect my hands against the heat of the bombs. And that was my work over there. But
was that feeling like for you there?
It's,
when you think about it now, what
emotions?
It's
kind of like a sad feeling, because you are like hoping that this time of the election you could finally get it, like a end of this like a nightmare. But that's the way it is. So now we have to just follow the lead of our president, new elected president, and Maria Corina Machado, and just be patient.
And Juan, I want to bring you in. The opposition alleged voting fraud and claims there's proof. How are they going about fighting the results, would you say?
Well, I think they have released the data that they have from their observers at the polls, which clearly contradict what the government is claiming. And there's definitely a need for pressure on the Maduro government to release the actual, not only the national totals, but also the polling place by polling place totals, so that the international community and other objective observers can say, okay, let's see where the fraud is if it does exist.
Yeah.
And I think that that's what's necessary right now for the release of that data. I think it was Gustavo Petro, the president, the neighboring president of Colombia, who urged the Maduro government yesterday to release those results. But at the same time, Petro has also been very clear that he opposes more sanctions by the United States on Venezuela, because there's a history in Latin America of the United States pressuring governments when it doesn't like the results, and there are so many that we don't have time to get into all of them. But I think the United States government should definitely press the Venezuelan government to release the results, but not to increase the blockade and the sanctions that only end up hurting more of the Venezuelan people.
And Ana and Martin, what does it say about the Venezuelan government saying they don't want to release the results? You know, what would you say that says?
Well, you know, that behavior, you know, that's a pattern really for many other elections before. You know, you go to the election, and I think one of the things that we need to say here is that Venezuela has been, in some point in life, the icon of democracy in Latin America. Okay, we really had this spirit of being a very peaceful population, and we do believe in democracy. The way to take, you know, a dictator out is going to be through votes. Yeah. So definitely, we see now that that's not true, and more, you know, some people say, well, you have. Have you ever seen a dictator that's going to be out, you know, with the vote of the people? But we still keep the, you know, the hope that that's true, and we keep going to the polls, you know, just to vote. So I do believe that the international pressure that is being is being
that
really,
could help.
Right, could help.
What are your thoughts, Martin?
I think this is the result for something that's been working for a long time. Maria Corina Machado and their team have been working for a long time about this election. She always tried to work with people, trying to get their trust and belief in the process. And she's very smart because she already knew they were not playing fair. So she got a backup plan. And I believe at this time the government never expect that, you know, like, because last time when they went to the elections, they said, I won with this, and they just accept the result and say, you know, I accept the result, I'm the loser. So that's the way it is. But now, no. Now, as soon as they proclaim, like, by the end of the night, they say, we got the proof that we won. And we won more than double the percentage of the people, the voters. And like I said in the beginning of this, they already knew they won because they had all this, the facts. And right now, you could see some videos with the paperwork and the people saying, this is the amount of vote we got, this is the amount of
vote. So it's
this
really
guy.
Disheartening to see it's, that it's not being respected.
Yeah, that it's not being respected. And the other thing that I'd like to add is that definitely, I don't think that the government, they were expecting the spontaneous protest, you know, from people coming
in the spark.
From, yeah, there was, you know, they were coming from the places that they used to win before. You know, they were coming from very, very poor barrios. They were coming, you know, from that, you know, and those are the ones that you see on the streets. And that really is something that is remarkable right now.
Well, but I would question, first of all, there have been repeated protests now for the last 25 years in Venezuela. It's not as if, you know, there were the Guarimba protests of 2004, protests. There were the Guarimba riots of 2014, there was the 2002 coup against Chavez, who was a democratically elected president, and yet the United States backed that coup and until the people beat it back. So there has been class strife in Venezuela now for two decades, more than two decades. And it's just a question that the that this most latest election, because you remember a few years ago, Juan Guaido declared himself president in the United States and a whole bunch of countries backed it and turned. And
it
where
was
did that go?
Totally different because Guaido was named after the national assembly. Like some people were already elected from the people, and now it changed because we have the proof that we are majority of this. We got more than 70% of the population there wanting for a change. And it's time for a change because we deserve the change. We've been struggling for so long, and now we have the proof that we need the change because people are starving, people are losing their life.
Is that why you enrolled? What would you say you enrolled to when you were in the resistance?
Yeah, because we were living like we deserve better, you know. We need better leaders that they can hear what the people needs, you know.
And we only have a couple seconds. Anything else you would like to say, Anna?
Well, you know, we need to be patient. You know, this process is going to be a long process. It's not going to happen tomorrow. It's not going to happen, you know, in 2 or 3 days. I think that the history is now in our side. And I believe that this is going to be resolved, you know, with the intervention of the international community.
You're hopeful. Well, thank you so much for all of your input.
Thank you.
Up next, new efforts to preserve the stories of Chicago's Latino community. Latinos make up the second largest racial group in Chicago, with nearly 30% of the city's population identifying as Hispanic or Latino, according to the 2020 census. But advocates say the impact they've had in Chicago isn't well represented in historical records. One group is working to fix that by creating their own space for Latinos to share their histories. Joining us with more on the project are Nancy Villafranco, president and co-founder of Raices Chicago Story Coalition, and Liliana Macias, vice president and co-founder of Raices Chicago Story Coalition. Thank you both for joining us. This sounds like a really interesting initiative. Nancy, I want to start with you. What inspired you to start Raices?
Thank you. Well, honestly, there was no one single thing that inspired me. I would say there was a series of experiences over the course of several years that really, and connections that got us to this moment. Anything from the 2016 election and the negative stereotypes that were just getting amplified so much more in, you know, the political sphere, from murals getting whitewashed, from trying to do my own history and research and not finding where to go, even though I've worked in museums, I've worked in places that have these archives, not even finding where to go for the big stories, much less some of the lesser known stories. So that, and while working at a history museum, collaborating with folks like Liliana.
Is that where you both met?
Yes, trying to actually create resources so that young people would learn about their own history, and finding that we had to like go shoot photos ourselves to
would
make sure that
was
they were learning.
A little bit of frustration, Liliana, trying to find like just moments of history in our culture.
Absolutely, it was incredibly frustrating, but it was also really disheartening because I was like, I matter, my community matters. Why does nobody care about preserving our stories?
Chicago has a long history.
Very long.
We have so much history. So tell me a little bit about, Nancy, how do you go about choosing the documents, the video, the audio? Take me through that process.
Yeah, well, thank you for asking, because our approach is, I think, a bit unique, right? For one, we want to make sure that we make accessible all the archives that they're already out there and they exist. So we want to build a directory so that those become accessible, so that folks know, go to our website, you find out about everything that is already available and out there, whether you're a student, a researcher, or an artist, or someone who wants to learn about their neighborhood. But we also want to work with Latino organizations for them to be able to have the capacity and the resources to do their own archiving. So that's where the coalition comes in, and professional development and resources, partnerships and collaborations, and then of course storytelling projects to address a lot of the interests, needs, but also gaps in the stories that are really not known or understood or sometimes generalized. You know, our story is so complex and so diverse, runs over so much time, right? And it's not fair,
so
right?
So this is really one space where people will be able to use as a tool. Would you say?
Yeah, we're a capacity-building organization, so we're not interested in centralizing the archives. Within Raices Chicago, we believe in the power of communal storytelling, and so we want to support organizations to tell their stories so that we could collaboratively tell a larger, more complex story about Chicago and Latinos in Chicago.
And do it together.
Of course. And what I found interesting, in 1980, the U.S. Census Bureau reported 14% of Latinos made up the Chicago population. Now there's seen an increase of almost 30%. Liliana, what do you think when you hear numbers like that?
Thank you for that question. I actually, I think I'm a little skeptical about those numbers, right?
Yeah.
Like, what does it mean? How was this data collected? We know that for many years, Latinos were under the white category in census, so we really actually don't have accurate numbers. But for me, those numbers really are super exciting because it tells us there's so many stories out there. There's like, we will not run out of
projects.
We're
underrepresented for sure.
Is there a story that you guys didn't know, or you're like, oh, maybe this is what people should know about? Don't forget about this history.
I mean, even the one that we're working on right now, we were reached out to by another organization, and they want to document the history of piñateros who are actively, you know, reproducing this beautiful cultural tradition, for example. And that we would have not thought to do that, but because folks came to us, and now that they realize that there's support and interest, it's been really interesting. We cannot wait to see the oral histories and the ways that we're going to share them with everybody.
That's
else.
That's really interesting. Are those some of the projects you're working on?
Yes.
Can you tell me a little bit more about that?
Sure. We, the Boulevard and Frida Community Organization, reached out to us to coordinate the collecting of oral histories for folks who have been for years working as piñata makers. And so they know that we have very good oral history skills as historians. And so we're really excited because we just actually started the collecting of oral histories. And it's really beautiful to be able to like sit in the spaces where folks create. We were in a candy store this week.
That's cool.
Yesterday. yesterday, collecting the oral histories.
So it takes you to different places.
Yeah, all over the city, because and even beyond the limits of the city, right? Because our stories are so vast and they cover the entire Chicagoland area, not just Chicago.
Nancy, you also mentioned that you work with other organizations to teach students how to archive. Tell me why that's so important.
I mean, it's important because the kids know that their history is getting erased with every year that they don't have a place to access it. They know that their cultural identity is not reinforced when they cannot go to a place where their identity and their history is celebrated. For that reason alone, this work is just terribly important right now.
So tell me about also, as we know, there's hundreds of Venezuelans who've made their way to Chicago. Is that something you're also thinking about how to document their stories?
Yeah. You know, as an undocumented person for many years, and when I was young, I used to live with the fear that I would be deported and disappeared, and nobody would know that I existed in Chicago. And so that idea of getting lost in the movement of people across borders, space and time, was something that I thought about. And so we're most definitely very interested in ensuring that the folks who are coming to Chicago understand that just like those who came before and those who are coming now, like, we matter, we are Chicago, and we will be here, and we're so excited to collect those stories.
What I also found interesting is when I go into your Instagram, you ask people to submit their stories. What was the purpose for that?
People want to share, I think, with everyone that we
talk
to.
Well, I think Latinos, we talk a lot in general.
We're storytellers. Like, that's our DNA.
But well, people, I mean, we grew up right in our house when we had celebrations. Yes. We would always gather and talk.
It's almost like a need. People want to tell their story to heal. We need to share them with one another to heal, to get along, to better understand one another. I would say it's a human need.
And you said you started this not even a year ago.
January, our website launched. It's been, 7 months plus, and we are beautifully surprised how much the positive response has been.
Well, thank you. I'm looking forward to continue to see your work.
And we look forward to collecting your stories.
Thank you. Yes. Of course. I would love that. Up next, a modern spin on a favorite dish. But first, a look at the weather. There's a new pizzeria in the Pilsen neighborhood that is putting a modern twist on an Italian classic. We recently sat down with the owners of Novel Pizza Cafe to learn about their journey.
You hear that sound? That's the sound of a thin classic-style Chicago pizza crust with a twist.
Like, some people might not like it, or they'd be like, oh, what is that? Like, why are you guys putting that on a pizza? And it's just like, why not?
That's Enrique Huizar, one of the owners of Novel Pizza in Pilsen. The Chicago native says he grew up watching his dad making pizzas.
My dad's been making pizzas for like 35 years. Still got a couple more minutes.
Huizar and his two friends, Ryan Catolico and Francis Almeida, opened Novel Pizza in June. The spot is decked out with 90s-inspired throwbacks, and the food embraces a fusion of their Mexican and Filipino cultures.
We just want to showcase our heritage.
Culture.
Let people know we could change our pizza. It's not going to be your regular Chicago, like, Italian. We're trying to infuse other things.
Serving tavern style or pan pizza topped with unique ingredients.
We do have some takes on our culture. So for in the Filipino realm of it, we have a longanisa, which is a Filipino breakfast pork sausage. It's like a sweet, savory, and then we balance that out with the jardinera, so it complements very well.
Before becoming a business owner, Huizar worked at a factory, and Catolico still works as an emergency room nurse for the VA hospital.
When the pandemic hit, obviously I'd be at the hospital and doing that, but then I would just come home and then start messing around making pizza with the ingredients and trying to just work up the recipe.
Eventually, their love for pizza brought them together, leading to a business partnership. The trio began selling pizzas at pop-up events.
I mean, we started mixing stuff with our hands, the dough, And then we finally bought like a little mixer, those at-home ones, and then now we have like these big Hobart.
The pizza spot also runs a cafe, crafting horchata lattes with ube.
I don't know, I just feel like this is my home. Like, I come here and it's just like, all right, it's go time.
The partners recently celebrated their grand opening.
Are you guys like proud of yourselves?
Yeah.
You guys definitely are doing?
Yeah. It's kind of like people see us like what we're doing and they're like, man, you're doing it. Like, because, I mean, like me, I've said it like, one day I want to open a pizza shop. And like, I know my friends, they're like, dang, you finally did it. And it's like, damn, I did do it.
And that's exactly like what we wanted to do, is showcase like,
Anybody
could do it if you have like the motive and you just put your mind to it.
All right, let's try this. The crispiness.
And if it wasn't obvious, I definitely enjoy the pizza. And Naval Pizza Cafe is open Wednesdays through Thursdays. How cool that they had one different career and now they open their own business. And that's our show tonight. Be sure to check out our website, WTTW.com/news, for the very latest from WTTW News. And join us tomorrow night at 5:30, 7 and 10 for the weekend review. Now, from all of us here at Chicago Tonight, Latino Voices, I'm Joanna Hernandez. Stay healthy, stay safe. Buenas noches.
Closed captioning is made possible by Robert A. Clifford and Clifford Law Offices, a Chicago personal injury and wrongful death firm that is proud to recognize its founder and senior partner, Robert Clifford, who ranked number one in the state of Illinois by Super Lawyers Top 10 2024 Illinois Super Lawyers List.